And now with no more ado, as promised, our guest, Dory Greenspan. Listeners, if you have a question about baking, you can join us this afternoon. Join the conversation with a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Call either of these numbers. We won't ask you for a pledge. We hope you've already taken care of that. But if you'd like to talk with Dory, you're more than welcome. 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Let me tell you just a little bit more about Dory Greenspan. She's the author of 9 cookbooks, the recipient of a James Beard Award and an International Association of Culinary Professionals Award for her book, Baking with Julia. That's the companion book to the PBS series that featured all kinds of fabulous bakers in the kitchen with Julia Child. Her latest book is Baking From My Home to Yours. Here are a couple of things I'm looking forward to making. Blueberry brown sugar plain cake, tribute to Katharine Hepburn brownies, double apple bundt cake, lemon cream tart, and the cake that got Dory fired. We'll let her tell the story. That's just for starters. Again, you can join the discussion with a phone call, listeners. Questions, stories about baking, please join us. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Baking From My Home to Yours, published by Houghton Mifflin. Dory Greenspan, you will find her and a marvelous blog on the web at www.dorygreenspan.com. Dory, D-O-R-I-E. Dory, hi, how are you?
Happy to be back with you, Celeste.
This is wonderful. I read on your website you've been nominated for another James Beard Cookbook Award.
It's been the most exciting few weeks, yes.
Congratulations. And another International Association of Culinary Professionals Award. And you're going to be inducted into the Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America.
It's so exciting and so incredible. And I got all of the news within like 30 minutes. So my head was just, I was just spinning. It's very exciting.
We got to have cake.
Well, we always have to have cake.
Plenty
of
cake.
We always do.
Top with sparklers.
Well, I love when you said that you were looking at the plain cake and the tribute to Katharine Hepburn brownies and the lemon tart to bake, because you've really chosen so many of my favorites.
Well, I can't wait to get into the kitchen. This weekend rolls around. I am so there. tell us here about that cake that got you fired.
Oh, you know, it was my first job in a professional kitchen. And I was a grown-up when I went into the kitchen. To try and work professionally. I already had a child. I was married. And it was a career change for me. And it wasn't easy because it was very hard for a woman to get a job in a kitchen. And I got a job through a million favors and begging people in a very, very trendy New York restaurant that was owned by women. And I was thrilled to be there. And I, of course, was the new kid on the block and the first one, you know, to be given the lowliest jobs in the kitchen. And I had two jobs I had to do every day. I had to make these great chocolate cookies, and I had to make a cake that was, a chocolate cake made with powdered ground almonds and whiskey-soaked raisins. And that was my job. As soon as I got in, I had to start it. Well, after a month of doing this, and never having really, worked in the kitchen before, and I didn't really know the rules and regs, I got a little bored. And so I decided I would change the recipe. Instead of putting almonds in the cake, I put pecans. And instead of rum, I used Armagnac. And instead of raisins, this was really my mistake, I used prunes, like everybody's least favorite fruit.
Dried plums.
Dried plums is what we call them now because nobody wants to know their prunes. And so that's what I did. And I sent the cake. I never told anybody I was doing it. I was just kind of playing around in the kitchen. And I sent the cake up for lunch service. And that afternoon, the owner called me into her office. And she said, "Well, that was some cake you sent up today." And I said, "Yeah." I was all excited. I was waiting for her to tell me it was fabulous. And she said, "That's not the cake that was supposed to go out for service." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "That was our signature cake that you changed." And I said, "Well, I'll never do it again." And she said, "That's right, because you're fired."
Wow.
And there was no talking her out of it. And, of course, now, you know, now I realize that she probably didn't have a choice. But that was the end of my first job. But I got to keep the recipe, and I still love it. And you know what? It's great with Armagnacs of prunes.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. The changes. Did anybody in the dining room complain?
Nobody ever told me. I don't know. No one came to. You know, that's a great question. Nobody ever came down to the kitchen to say, what do we have here?
This?
But they must have if you know, she found out and fired me.
Yeah. Now, with a cake like that, you create that, you have to have a pretty strong sense that that's going to work.
Well, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, being young and inexperienced, it's you know, the ignorance is bliss rule. But I didn't make major changes. I changed flavor, not really structure. So we had ground almonds in the cake, and I put ground pecans. We had a dried fruit that was soaked in alcohol, and I just, you know, changed that. And in my book, what I've done in the sections called Playing Around, it's really essentially that. I've taken recipes and given you a basic recipe, one that I really, really love, and then in Playing Around, have given you ideas for making those kinds of changes where you're not changing the structure, you're not really changing the formula completely, but you're getting, you use the word tweak, and it is kind of a tweak on a recipe. You might get a different texture. You might get a different flavor. It's just another, it's a variation on it. And I love doing that. I just kind of can't help playing around in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, one of the things you say on your blog is that you're looking forward to playing around with arugula.
Yes, and I wanted to do it this weekend, and I didn't get a chance. I got the dough made, and then the weekend got away with me, or from me, maybe with me too. But I had, when I was making arugula with Michelle Norris, of All Things Considered, we made the arugula that I had gotten the recipe from my mother-in-law, and it's filled with jam and chopped nuts and chopped raisins, and I put some chocolate in there too. And we finished making them. We had so much fun. And we were wrapping up and cleaning up the kitchen, and Michelle turned to me and said, "What else do you think I could do with these?" And it just had never really occurred to me. I mean, I had changed the filling, but I hadn't done anything drastically different with the arugula. And I said, "You know, now that you say this, I'm thinking, well, the dough has no sugar in it. So I bet you could do something savory with it." And Michelle was just off and running. And I've gotten emails from her that she's used hot pepper jelly in the arugula. Mm-hmm. She's made ham and cheese arugula. She tried making peanut butter arugula for her son, but that, she said, was a mess. Thank goodness she had a lined baking sheet. The peanut butter just, you know, oozed all over. But this is really when baking gets to be so much fun, when you can, I mean, I think it's fun from beginning to end, but once you know a recipe and you can start playing with it, it's in making it your own. It really is fun.
Yeah. That arugula with, let's see, what could we put in there? We could maybe put some herbs and cheese.
You could put herbs in the cheese, absolutely. You could even, see, this is how we spin. You could even put, now that you say that, you could put herbs in the dough. The dough is made, it's such a simple dough to make. It's made in the food processor. And so you could chop up some herbs. You could even use the food processor to chop them up. And then when you put the butter and the cream cheese in, work the herbs into that. Mm. And then the dry ingredients, and you'd have an herb dough. It would be great.
Can I put that herb dough or that dough into the freezer and have it, you know, down the line, let's say?
Absolutely.
Pull it out?
This is what's great about doughs in general. Yes, you could have it in the freezer. You could even, to make life easier, you could roll the dough out and put it in the freezer rolled out so that when you were ready to bake, you could just pat the filling on, use a pizza cutter to cut the wedges, roll it up and go. Or you can do what I often do is make the arugula and freeze them unbaked. And then you just pull them out. Don't have to defrost them. Just pull them out of the freezer, pop them on a lined baking sheet, and bake them just a couple of minutes more.
How about some feta and some olives?
I'm liking it. I'm really liking the idea of putting herbs in the dough.
That's a great idea. You know,
good one, Celeste.
Who's the wonderful Italian cook? She's from Venice. Marcella.
Yeah.
She does pasta with herbs.
Of course. See, it's when, yes, yes, she does. And this is a dough the way pasta is a dough.
Mm-hmm.
And this dough, the dough farrugia, which is, it's just a really easy dough to, it's an easy dough to make, particularly in the food processor, and it's a very, very easy dough to roll. So even if you're an inexperienced roller, if you're a little shy about pie crusts, this is a great place to start because it rolls out beautifully and you feel like a hero first time out.
Yeah. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, Dory Greenspan. Her latest book, Baking from My Home to Yours. Listeners, you can join the discussion, the conversation this afternoon with a telephone call. Join us at 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. One of the things I'm thinking about playing around with is the marshmallows.
Yes.
I'm thinking about digging out the candy thermometer. And I'm thinking marshmallow and coated with chocolate, either coated with chocolate or drizzled with chocolate. What do you think?
Well, either one. Drizzling's a little easier.
Uh-huh.
But coating would be a fine thing to do with it. You want the marshmallows, so if you're going to coat them with chocolate, I'd suggest that you get them cold before you dip them in chocolate.
Yeah.
Because these, I love these homemade marshmallows. They're very tender. Softer than store-bought marshmallows. They'll get harder if you, not harder, but they'll develop a firmer crust if you leave them out in the open air for a while. But when you're making them, when they're first made and for a day or so, they're really pretty tender, so it would be better to just give them a good chill before you dip them or drizzle them.
Okay. That was one of my favorite treats as a kid, marshmallows covered in chocolate. You know, it was a Fannie Mae candy, and I don't think they make that anymore.
I don't see marshmallows that much
as a confection anymore.
To be bought, you see them. It's, what's interesting is there's such a memory from childhood, and in Paris, you see them as an after dessert in the fanciest restaurants, and they're brought out in beautiful apothecary jars. Sometimes they're made in long, long strips, and they're taken out of their jars with silver tongs and then cut with scissors. And it's that wonderful, you know, there you are in very sophisticated surroundings, feeling like a kid, you know, truly the kid in the candy shop, when you get something that is so associated with childhood. But if you've never made marshmallows, they're, first of all, they're so much fun to make. They're a little messy. Because marshmallows are marshmallowy, so they're sticky and you end up licking your fingers. But they're really fun to make, and they're one of those treats that you make at home and think, I didn't know I could do this at home.
Yeah.
Great sense of satisfaction and pleasure, and they're so good. They really are better than anything I've tasted store-bought.
Yeah. Well, you know, this beginning this evening here, you know, you probably heard me read all the weather stuff that's going on. We have a cold front coming in, and it's been lovely and warm, and everything's been blooming, and now it's going to turn really cool and wet and windy. We're expecting winds, you know, like 40 miles an hour. So, you know, I'm thinking now hot chocolate.
It's funny to be thinking in April, but when you describe that weather, and of course, any weather you get, we're going to get 2 days later. So
hang on.
Yeah, I'll be having hot chocolate shortly after you.
You're forewarned. You're forewarned. Now, okay, so what do you recommend maybe we bake this weekend besides the marshmallows?
Well, mentioned the double apple bun cake,
uh-huh.
And I love bun cakes. I love them for a million reasons. I love that they're always beautiful, whether you're an experienced baker or not. And that's because the pans are so great. You know, the pan gives the bundt cake a beautiful form. I love that they're good keepers, so that you kind of get a lot of bang for your buck. You put in not much time making them, and you'll have them for the whole weekend. And they're big, so you can cut them and share them with lots of people. And I love that double apple bundt cake. The weather you're describing makes me think it would be perfect Yep, perfect for the weekend.
Yeah. Now, for folks who are planning a ham dinner on Sunday, Easter Sunday, I'm thinking sweet potato biscuits. What do you think?
That would be fun with ham. You know, they're slightly sweet. I would suggest in making those to use canned sweet potatoes that are in the syrup and just mash them. It makes life very easy and delicious, and they'd be awfully good. Actually, any of I got a little biscuit crazy as I was working on the book. They're so much fun to make. They're easy, and they're so good. But the sweet potato biscuit would be great. But you know what? Also, that maple cornmeal drop biscuit.
Ooh, that sounds good.
That little, again, that's like the sweet potato, that sweetness and a little bit of grittiness that you, I mean, gritty in a good way, a little bit of grittiness that you get from cornmeal. That would be awfully nice with ham.
Yeah, that stone ground cornmeal is a wonderful thing. Well, we've got a listener who would like to talk with you, Dory. Dory Greenspan is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking with her this afternoon about her book, Baking from My Home to Yours. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, stories about baking. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Listener in Urbana, line one, hi.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I just have a really quick question, and I'll listen offline. Once I've baked the cookies, what's the absolute best way to store them? I'm a little unhappy with the plastic container I've had and am wondering what I should do.
What, before you go offline, what kind of cookies are you talking about?
Drop cookies.
Drop cookies, like chocolate chip cookies
Right.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. If you store things in a plastic container, it's fine, but the cookies have a tendency to get a little soft that way. I store a lot of cookies, particularly drop cookies, chocolate chip cookies, peanut butter cookies, in an old-fashioned cookie jar. And I find that's a great way to store them. They're also right there when you want them. But for longer storage, I freeze cookies, and I freeze them in plastic bags. I find that that's really the best way to do it. I use the old-fashioned twist-tie bags, put the cookies in, and then suck out, I know this sounds funny, but kind of, you know, suck out all the air that's in there. You can use a straw if you want, just, you know, gather up the top of the bag and put a straw in it and pull out all that air, and then I double bag it. I put another bag around it, and I find that keeps cookies really, really well in the freezer. And that would be a good way to keep cookies at room temperature as well.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Dory Greenspan. She's the author of 9 cookbooks, the recipient of a James Beard Award and an International Association of Culinary Professionals Award for her book, Baking with Julia. And now she's been nominated for those awards again for her latest book, Baking from My Home to Yours. And she's also about to be inducted into the Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about baking. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Now, listeners, I also want to give you another telephone number, and that's to make a pledge to this public radio station, a pledge of financial support. Join us, become a member of the Friends of WILL. Maybe it's time for you to renew. Today would be a great day to do it. It's the last day of our spring membership drive. We're hoping to make 250 new friends by the end of the day today. And our drive goal, $225,000. We've got a special thank you gift this afternoon for folks who call in with a pledge of $120 or more. And that is Dory's book, Baking from My Home to Yours. We would love to send you this book. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. The number to call with a pledge of financial support, 244-9455. If you'd like to talk to Dory, 333-9455 or toll free 800-222-9455. Let's talk with another listener, someone calling in from Champaign on line one. Hi.
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 One of my favorite cakes. My grandmother used to make it for me, German. That's the only time I felt love from Grandma, actually, was the Anjou food cake made from scratch, which I think was, 11 egg whites or something or other?
It's a lot of egg whites. That's really just about all it is egg whites.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think that, in terms of...
Sugar, of course. I mean, but it's
maybe,
that's what holds the whole thing up.
Maybe that was the issue. I was young and I loved sugar.
No. I mean, but the fact that your grandmother made something for you, I mean, this is what makes baking so great. I mean, that it really... Oh, I can just get on my little I'm a baking evangelist soapbox just for a second.
Sure.
I mean, it's that... As much as I've tried to find a reason for baking, like, it's a major food group, all those sweets, really the only reason we do it is because the process is so wonderful, and we get to share it with people. And so you said, you knew your grandmother loved you because she made you angel food cake. Anytime that you bake for someone, it really is a show of love.
Yeah, but the other part was that was the only, at my birthday was the only time, and the other time, I know she loved her, this is my dad, mother, her daughter, we always figured that she loved, her kids more.
But it was, did she bake cookies for her too?
But whenever, you certainly don't buy angel food cake in the supermarket, it just doesn't, and
it
even
doesn't taste the same.
At the bakeries, it just doesn't seem like it's quite the same. I don't know what they do to it. Actually, my favorite cake is the German chocolate cake,
mm-hmm.
with Kirsch. But that's another one that's very hard to... I don't know, is that a hard cake to make?
Well, actually, no, I'm going to ask you a question, because when you said a German chocolate cake with... I was thinking of the cake that has a coconut caramelly filling. Is that the cake you're talking about?
I have to give... I don't know the German word for it, but actually it's the forest cake. The
That's what I was going to ask you, because as soon as you said Kirsch, I thought of the Black Forest cake.
Right.
Actually, I did a cake with... I wrote two books, actually, with Pierre Hermé, who's a pastry chef in Paris, and he comes from Alsace, which was... at one time German, then French, then German, then French. And we worked on a version, a kind of sleek, slimmed-down version of a Black Forest cake. It's an extraordinary cake. And you're right, you don't see them that often these days, but it's just a great dark, dark chocolate cake with Kirsch-soaked cherries. Kirsch is a cherry liqueur, and you use that to soak cherries, and then it's filled and covered with whipped cream and chocolate shavings. It's not only delicious, it's stunning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another one that, it's, even at German restaurants or such, if you order it just doesn't, it's okay. But
this is all part of why baking at home is such a good thing to do, because you get to choose the best quality ingredients. And you're not taking shortcuts with the ingredients. I mean, you're really buying the best ingredients and using them carefully.
Yeah, well, I think what happened is I was thwarted as a child, because I think it was maybe, I don't know whether it was 10 or 12, and my mother was gone. I decided to make a two-layer cake of some sort. And I lived in an area where we had a lot of cousins, so what you could do is you could borrow, And I was making this cake, and I couldn't find any baking powder. So, of course, I didn't know. I put in baking soda.
Ooh.
And so,
ooh.
So what happened is it was two layers, and it was sort of cute. It was two layers, and I made some kind of caramel frosting for it. And
you were an ambitious little kid.
And so I put that on, and my mom came home, and she said, gee, she said, you should have waited. I would have helped you with the frosting, Well... Actually, after we bit into the cake, it really didn't matter. It was absolutely terrible. But anyway, so maybe that's why I haven't decided to ever tackle the German forest cake, because as a child being thwarted.
But it's actually, cakes are interesting because they're very tackleable, because you can do them in stages. You can make the cake, and you can set it aside. A cake like the chocolate cake that goes for the Black Forest cake can be made ahead. You could even freeze it and then you can work on the filling and the construction. You know, cakes are like, it was Carême, the famous 18th century pastry chef, who said that pastry is the sister art to architecture. I mean, it's really about construction. And you can construct, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and you don't have to make a cake in a whole day. So you can really make the components of the cake and then construct it when you have time. You should give cake baking a shot again.
Yeah, now, the one that I became a master at one time was the tapioca pudding where you you separate the egg and the egg whites and blend. And, I mean, there's nothing really quite like that. You know, you blend them in together. You see?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And but the problem is I made like a triple batch, and what I did is I separated them, put them in little dishes, put them in the refrigerator, and then unfortunately I ate them all. And I had to do all the dishes, you know, and I thought, why didn't I just keep it in the bowl and just eat it, you know? Okay, great program.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling.
As soon as this listener hangs up and gets back to his radio, you're going to have to tell the story of how you were thwarted in the kitchen as a child. You told that story last time you were on the program with us. It's a marvelous story, fabulous story. And I hope that he will be inspired by this story that you're going to tell. Let me reintroduce you, though. Dory Greenspan, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Questions about baking, stories about baking, we'd love to hear from you this afternoon. You can join the conversation with a telephone call, 333-9455. 800-222-9455. Well, tell us that story, Dory.
Well, the story is that my mother and father were wonderful, but neither one of them was cooks, and I didn't cook as a child. I didn't bake as a child. I really didn't know a whole lot about the kitchen. As I proved when I was 13 years old, when my parents were away, and I was with two friends, and we decided to make frozen French fries. And we put a pot of oil up to boil. And I remembered in science class that the teacher had told us that water boils faster if you put a cover on the pot. And so I thought, well, here's a liquid in a pot. I put a cover on top of the pot. And when I lifted it, there was this huge, huge fire, just flames all around the edge of the pot. And I burnt down my parents' kitchen. Mm. It was really quite horrible. I mean,
yeah.
In retrospect, it's a kind of funny story that that I burnt down the kitchen, and here I am, you know, a baker.
Right.
But I didn't go back into the kitchen again until I got married. It
yeah.
really, talk about being thwarted.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. So that listener, he should not be discouraged.
Take courage.
Yeah, take courage. Sally forth. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line one, hi.
Hi, I need some advice.
Okay.
I have a son who's getting married in another state, doesn't live in the state where he's getting married, and we're traveling, and he wants to have a wedding cake. He and his fiancé are both climbers. The only thing they've found is the topper for the cake, which is two climbers in their helmets and climbing gear.
Very cute.
They would like their cake to look like a mountain. And I've suggested that maybe they could, you know, do it in layers and freeze the parts of the cake, but they don't want to do that.
Wait, they want to make their own wedding cake.
Well, they would happily have somebody make it for them if they could find somebody who would make something that tasted more interesting than, say, pound cake or,
mm-hmm.
you know, yellow cake or whatever. I forget what kind of cake they would like. But I've seen in a local bakery here in Illinois, the wedding's going to be in Ohio, and then I can't have somebody make it here unless my son allows it to be frozen ahead of time, and we take it out there with us. I saw something that looks like the top of a mountain, and it's a tin mold. And I'm wondering if I should bother asking the baker if I can borrow his mold. I'm not even sure that it's for baking cakes, and the owner wasn't around. Anyway, do you have any thoughts on this conundrum we have?
No, but yes. I just, because I don't know your region, in the best of all possible worlds, I could tell you, oh, call my friend Sally, she's a fabulous baker, and she'll do this for you, and she's right where you are. But that's not the case. I just want to put a pitch in for freezing. If you had someone, well, I don't know if you could do this, I was thinking, if you had someone that you knew close to you who could make exactly the cake that you wanted, the fact is that, this still surprises me, and I've been in a thousand professional kitchens, pastry kitchens. The freezer becomes, it's another tool in a pastry kitchen. Things are frozen all of the time. In fact, often freezing layers is part of the process. You have to do it in a cake, certain cakes. And so if a professional were working on this cake and it had to be frozen, I would advise your son to not worry about it. But that said, it's awfully cumbersome to travel with a cake. There are people who do this. I mean, the very, very famous cake designers, Colette Peters, who has a fabulous book about unusual cakes and wedding cakes and birthday cakes, or Sylvia Weinstock, they travel. I don't know how they do it, though, but they do travel with cakes. I would, you know what? Maybe you should see if Colette Peters has a website, and you could actually query her. She's an extraordinary cake baker, and her specialty is unusual cakes.
Okay, Colette Peters. Huh? Mm-hmm. Put in Colette Peters and cakes.
That's what I would try, and I would Google. I don't have a, I don't know that she has a website, but perhaps you could be in touch with her, with anybody who does. Who's accustomed to doing wedding cakes, to get that kind of advice. And if it's your local baker who's got that bowl you like, mm-hmm. he or she just might lend it to you.
Yeah, I think I may ask. But then I'll have to get permission from my son to trust me to try to bake something. Do you have a suggestion for an interesting cake that would work?
Once again, I'm going to send you to either Colette's book or to Toba Garrett's books, because cakes that you're going to be carving, in a way. I mean, that you'll be shaping, that you're going to be serving to more than the usual, 8, 10, 12 people, really need to have a good structure. Mm-hmm. And so I think you should look at the cakes that are really made for that purpose.
Is it Toba or Tova?
T-O-B-A, I think her last name is Garrett, G-A. R, maybe two R's, E-T, maybe two T's.
Okay.
Sorry. Spelling is not... Thank goodness for spell check.
Well, you're doing very well. When I'm asked for names, they just fly right out of my head, or they get buried in a deep
No,
pile
these
of
are
names.
Extraordinary decorative cake makers, so... I know their names. I just don't get to spell them that often.
Okay, thanks a bunch.
Okay,
sure.
Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in LaSalle County, Line 4. Hi, you're on the air with Dory Greenspan.
Hi, it's LaSalle County. I want to mention this, even though it's not a cake, but it really astounded me when the gentleman talked about whipping the egg whites into the tapioca pudding, because I'd never think of anybody having that. And my brother, when he was in service, he was coming home, and I said, "You'll never guess what I made you." And that's what it was, and that's what he wanted.
Isn't that interesting?
I have a sister, and from the time, it's only a cake you make yourself out of a ladies' magazine, but it was called Miami Beach Birthday Cake. And I made that so many times, and I didn't dare make it anymore because my sister always made it. And the third little token I've got to tell you is when my dad was alive, because he was diabetic, I hardly ever made anything at home. But I made a pie that it came out of a ladies' magazine, too, but it had pudding. And when I got all done with it, I was going out with this thing, so I put it in the glass shelf of the refrigerator, and it went right straight through.
Oh.
My dad said, "You pay for that, Jill." Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. But don't be deterred. You got to just pick it up and keep on going.
That's what spoons were made for.
Gather around the fridge and dig in. There you go. What's most often requested by your husband, Michael, and your son, Joshua? What do they want you to make when it's their turn to ask for something?
Well, they're so funny because they're often afraid to ask because they'll say, okay, is there something you need to make? They're very considerate that way, you know, if I'm working on a recipe story. But it's so interesting. They both have – I'm a crunchy person. I like things with a lot of texture. They love puddings. They love chocolate pudding. They love the lemon tart that you mentioned at the top of the show. My husband adores that tart. And they really like the kind of creamy, silky, velvety textures, the kinds of you know, spoon desserts, things that you can kind
of – bread pudding.
Oh, bread pudding.
Oh.
Yum.
So that's another one to think about this weekend when it's going to – or this week when it's so chilly.
You know, it's funny because I've been pushing spring, I guess as we all have, and yet there are so many – comforting and, you know, comfort desserts that when you said, you know, hot chocolate or you know, bread pudding or puddings, I love those desserts. Mm-hmm. So I could manage to have cool weather for another week if it meant bread pudding.
Yeah, yeah. It's one last hurrah. And then we're on to, you know, to spring and to summer. Before we go, though, you've got to talk with us, though, about that lemon cream tart.
It's extraordinary. It's a recipe that the cream filling, and I call it a cream, and I don't really know. Cream makes it sound like it's whipped cream and light. I don't really have a great word for it. I almost wanted to call it lemon satin or lemon velvet because that's really it has that kind of smooth, velvety texture. It's a recipe that I got from Pierre Hermé, the pastry chef in Paris, and it has all of it's remarkable. It has all of the ingredients that lemon curd has. And when you make a lemon curd, you put those ingredients, lemon juice, eggs, sugar, and butter, you have to get the texture from somewhere, in a pot. And stir, and you have curd. With this lemon cream, it's the same ingredients, but you stir over in a double boiler until you stir everything except the butter. And it gets thick, and you can see, I use a whisk, and you can see the whisk leaving its trail in the lemon mixture. Then you cool it just a little bit, put it in a blender, and start adding the butter. Mm. And it's the same ingredients, but because the butter is not melted but mixed into the lemon, when it's cooled a little bit, it emulsifies, and the change in the texture is it's a totally different texture. And somehow, I don't know why, but I feel like the lemon cream is even lemonier than lemon curd. It's a fabulous, fabulous recipe. And you can make – it doesn't take long to make the lemon cream filling. And you can freeze it. So if you want a little time to make your tart shell, you can do things in stages. Or you can use the lemon cream in other kinds of desserts when spring does come. It's great to put it in the bottom of a tart and put fresh berries over the top. It's really versatile, and it's so good. It's really delicious.
Now, my producer, Harriet Williamson, has made this tart on a number of occasions now, and she's in love with it.
Oh, I'm so glad. It really is. You know, I was afraid when I first wrote about it, I was afraid that I was being overly enthusiastic. And I've heard from so many people who have said that they've loved it and that they didn't think that my calling it extraordinary was too much.
Yeah. I've never made lemon curd, but that's another thing now on the to-do list. And I have purchased it, you know, because I love lemon curd. But here's something, you know, as you think about moving into summer and you know it gets so hot, a little bit of lemon curd in the bottom of an ice cream dish, scoop of vanilla ice cream, fresh berries.
Yum. Yum.
It's cool and refreshing, and it's so easy.
And lemon curd keeps very well in the refrigerator. I always take a piece of plastic wrap and press it against the top of it to create an airtight seal. But it also freezes, as I said. So you can make it. You can divide it up into little portions. And it's just a treat. Now, those biscuits that we were talking about before, if you were to do a plainer biscuit or a scone, like the double almond scones, and just a little bit of that lemon cream, that would be a nice way to start a weekend brunch.
Mm, sounds wonderful. Dori, it's been a pleasure once again talking with you.
It's so good to talk to you. Thank you.
And I hope we'll have you back on in the future.
Dori, call. Okay. I'll be happy to do it.
Okay. Dori Greenspan, thank you so much. And the best of luck to you. And I wish we could be there when you're inducted and lift the champagne and
thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. Dori Greenspan, our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Her latest book, Baking from My Home to Yours, has been nominated for a James Beard Award and an International Association of Culinary Professionals Award. And she's going to be inducted. Let me see if I've got this right here. She's going to be inducted this spring into the Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America. Our congratulations to her. You'll find her on the web. She's got a fun blog, www.dorigreenspan.com. It's DORIE Greenspan.com.